Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Big Joe Dubin, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. Rex Road on vacation this week. And right now we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Gentry Estes to the program from the Tennessean. Gentry, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, gentlemen. Good to hear you, Big Joe. Are you waking up early this morning?
I'm usually up by 5 because I can't sleep every night. So to get the offer to come in and be on my favorite radio show, Gentry, I'm not passing that down, Bubba. Never.
He's oversold. He compared us to Babe Ruth, you know, watching Babe Ruth.
I'm telling you, it's like
a little bit oversold.
It's like going to batting practice with Babe Ruth. Like you're like hanging out with Babe Ruth. That's so to me, this is what the show's like for me today, hanging out with Babe Ruth. Plus, Gentry, my computer and my microphone are not muted, and I don't know how to figure that out like Rex Ruth.
Yes, it's true. That is very true. So, Gentry, big game tonight in the World Cup. Flo Balogun back in there, at least, I guess, for the time being, barring an appeal from Belgium. But what do you make of that development, and what do you make of the chances tonight for the U.S. team against Belgium?
Yeah. How could anyone think that a notoriously corrupt sports organization could have made possibly a corrupt decision?
Yep.
Trying to bring the U.S. striker back. I mean, it's good for the U.S. national team, clearly, to have Balogun back out there. You know, surprise, sure, just because FIFA had spent a couple of days telling the U.S. don't worry about appealing, you're not going to get him back, it's not going to happen. All of a sudden, poof, he's back. FIFA's going to FIFA, man, always. It just so happened in this particular instance that benefited the United States. So we'll see how it goes against Belgium. This is a winnable game for the U.S. I think it would have been a winnable game even without Balogun. Belgium knocked the U.S. out in this round 12 years ago. I've seen it before. That Belgium team was a lot better than this one. This U.S. team was not as good as this one. And the U.S. still had a chance to win that game. It went to extra time. So with it being in Seattle, which if anyone's been there, I mean, that's one of the loudest stadiums I've ever been in. I kind of like the U.S. chances in this one.
What do you make of what Chris McFarland as Preds GM has done in a very short time to this point? I mean, it's not been like they've gone out there and signed a bunch of free agents or anything, but he's brought in some bottom six forwards via trade. And then I thought a great deal the other day, Gentry, getting Maverick Bork in, taking advantage of a contract and a cap situation in Dallas, and now they've signed Maverick Bork to a long-term deal as well. What do you make of kind of what you've seen in the very early stages from Chris McFarland?
Yeah, that particular move seemed to upset the Stars fans, which is always a pretty good thing if you're in their division. But I feel like what McFarland's done is he's raised the floor already for this team, and what he did was he aimed at the age gap on the roster. Things really had the potential to get off the rails pretty bad for the Predators here the next few years, given the fact that it seemed like half the roster was all 30-somethings who were all being aged out of the league, or they were players who were too young and weren't ready yet. So that could have been pretty rough here the next few years. It could have gotten a lot worse before it got better. But what I feel like he took aim at that middle generation, the missing middle class on the team. And I feel like that has raised the floor to the point that they're not going to be a complete disaster the next few years. That said, it's going to be a lot different to raise the ceiling, and we'll see if he's able to do that the next few years and actually, you know, get this team to be a contender with a group full of older players that I just don't know if the Preds are going to have it in them to be a serious contender again, you know, while they still have Roman Josi, Steven Stamkos, O'Reilly, guys like that. But I do feel like the next couple of years are going to be easier to watch. And as you said, I think he's made some pretty proactive, smart decisions by taking advantage of certain situations, and, you know, they're better for it.
Gentry Estes is with us. I like the Moose. I think it's a shot across the bow for a lot of things that's going on. I like McFarland, but also like the fact that Gentry, and you know this well, they're building this as not a rebuild, just a reload. And I'm telling you, to a fan base, when you hear that, it's a world of difference. Nobody wants to know you're rebuilding. Nobody's buying into that. If you're reloading a little bit, so you need a few pieces to go forward, I'm all about that. So I'm of the mind of like, all right, are they going to win the Stanley Cup next year? No. Can they get in the playoffs? Hopefully, and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. They different GMs, different players, but they still look like a team that are going to be right on the line to make the playoffs or not and get one of those wild card spots. And it just seems like no matter what happens, the Preds are always going to be that way. And, you know, like I said, raising the ceiling is going to be the real trick here. And I think that could still be a ways down the road. But that said, I don't think they're going to have one of the worst teams in the league with Chris McFarland as GM.
I mean, I like what he's done. I like when he interviewed him that day, his just different mindset than what we're used to. And I thought what spoke volumes that day was when Haslam said, we had the first list and we ran into problems with CAA and couldn't get the search thing. He goes, but the one name that stuck out was McFarland. He's like, I kind of wrote that name down to the side. And I'm thinking, all right, he liked him from the beginning. Saban liked him, and it was a done deal. So I like what he's doing so far. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I think with Haslam, it's interesting that they clearly waited for this hire. This is clearly what they wanted. They waited for Colorado to get out of the playoffs, and you know, look, this is an organization that they're not doing the full rebuild. They're just not. And you know, it's come up so many times over the years now. You know, tear it down, start. They're just not going to do it. This is a team that wants to contend to be able to make the playoffs. They want to be able to sell season tickets off playoff appearances, and I still think that's probably how this is going to go. But there's a difference again between kind of sneaking into the playoffs and being a true contender. And I don't, we'll see how long it takes the Preds to get to that second level.
So Gentry, we're not that far away from college football season. We got SEC media days coming up around the corner. And before you know it, fall camp will be here and college football will be underway. You've got Tennessee who is not going to have Chaz Coleman. So number one, I'm interested to see what you think on that and how big of a problem that could be. But just overall, what do you think of Tennessee and Josh Heupel heading into this year with a roster that I'm looking at that has a lot of talented players? I think offensively, if they get good quarterback play, they could be a really potent offense again this year. Defensively, I have no idea how they're going to get to the quarterback, even though they've changed up things with Jim Knowles coming in as DC. Like, I could see a lot of things happening with them, Gentry. Like, if they get really good quarterback play from one of these young guys, I mean, maybe they surprise people and go like 9-3, 10-2. I could also see where their schedule, if they don't get, you know, if the young guys struggle a little bit, them being around 6-6 or 7-5. Like, I have no idea what to make of Tennessee heading into this year. What do you think?
No, I think you bring up, I mean, obviously the quarterback's the big question and what they're going to do there. But it felt like all through spring ball, whenever we wanted to keep asking about the quarterbacks, it felt like they wanted to keep talking about the defense. And I felt like there was a lot of optimism on that side of the ball. Losing a guy like Coleman doesn't help. But I do feel like with the new DC, there was a lot of optimism coming out of the spring about Tennessee's improvement defensively. I believe one of the hardest jobs in the SEC to me is to be that defensive coordinator at Tennessee because of how they want to play offense. That the offensive structure with going the fast break pace, the time of possession gap, that's just something that whoever coaches defense at Tennessee is probably going to have to deal with. It's interesting to me that in Heupel's tenure, when Tennessee was their best, the team that lost at Ohio State in the playoffs, the playoff team, had the best numbers for time of possession out of any team he's had there. That offense was the slowest, in other words. They focused on running the ball and playing good defense, and that actually had the best results so far. You would say 22 was a better team with the fast break offense, but his only playoff team was that way. So it's interesting to me with a new quarterback, are you still going to go as fast as what you want to? Because I feel like to help the defense some of that might need to start on the offensive side of the ball. And that feeds into the fact that you have a new quarterback. How comfortable do you feel letting him operate at the pace that Heupel wants to operate? So I feel like it's a strange scenario with Tennessee, because at some point it's all going to click, but one has something to do with the other, if that answer makes any sense at all, Robbie. Yep.
No, I'm with you. Listen, Gentry, what's funny, people like, well, if Heupel goes 7-5, he's out of there. And my question coming back to people with that is, who are you going to get? Who out there right now is better than Josh Heupel, right? Who out there is better that's going to come in and do more things? That, I mean, you could look everywhere and find somebody, but then you're starting over again. I mean, this guy is going to what? This will be his sixth year in Knoxville, and it's a lot better than it was the previous six before that. And so people were quick, like, well, I get him out of there. Who are you going to find? Who's out there that's better? And I always ask people that, and they cannot come back to me and tell me anybody out there who's as good or better than Josh Heupel.
I think Heupel's done a good job, but I feel like in an NIL era, there's more of an upside for Tennessee in terms of just gathering talent. And when you look at Tennessee's roster, it's been this way for a few years now. There is a lot of talent, as Robbie said, but still maybe not quite as much as some of the top teams in the league. And I don't know, you know, as good a job as Heupel's done, it was a rough end to last season. You don't lose by multiple touchdowns and kneeling to Vanderbilt and have it go well. That's going to hurt your offseason. And I do feel like this is a big year for Heupel. He's got to get the quarterback decision right for a lot of reasons, but I feel like with his offense and what they want to do, you're going to have to pick the right guy, because whoever you don't pick is probably going to transfer, and then you're going to be stuck with this decision for a while.
I do think the crucial game is that Texas game. I just think, and for some reason, it's an 11 o'clock game, which that's a whole other segment we could talk about, which is asinine. But I think that game is massively huge for Heupel and the Tennessee program, with who's coming in and what's happening that day. That could be a pivotal moment for Heupel. You win that game big time, I think things are really, really good. You lose that game big time, oh, man, who knows? I'm going to go on the fact that I hope they kick Texas' ass and they move forward from that game.
It can be such a close call in that league. You wonder how much differently last season sets up for Heupel had Tennessee won that game against Georgia, which they probably should have won that game against Georgia.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the SEC schedule and everything, I mean, there's going to be the games like that. And, you know, Tennessee's going to have to take care of business a little better at Neyland Stadium. That was what got away from Heupel last year. They had been very difficult to deal with there on his watch until last season. And that's a trend he's got to stop.
No doubt. All right, Gentry, you're my golf guy. I can't have you on here without talking about the British Open and Scottie Scheffler. Does he get it done next week? And if he doesn't, like if he goes through this whole season without winning a major, what do you think that does for the discussion around him?
I don't think that it does much for the discussion, just because he's been runner-up in seemingly every tournament he's played in now for months. You know, I watched that guy shoot a 62 to go win the gold medal when I was there. I mean, so he's got it in him. That said, I don't think I'd pick him to win the Open Championship this time. Scheffler's can be frustrating when you watch him, because it's just, there are times he makes this game look easier than any other golfer. I mean, just fairway to green, just doing everything he wants to do, and then he'll miss a short putt, or he can't quite close the deal. And I mean, it's as close to golfing perfection as I think you're going to find. But those missed putts, it cost him a tournament a couple weeks ago. So yep. I don't, it's hard to pick him in this. But I mean, he went and won it last year, days after speaking for, you know, minutes on how, you know, this wasn't, golf wasn't defining him as a person, basically, and how the success doesn't, you know, was unfulfilling in some way, and then he went and won the tournament. So maybe he just needs to open up to the British media again.
I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, do you get – I know if you win the Masters, you get a 10-year exemption. Is it the same thing for the British Open?
They've all got different rules.
Because I hope there's a 30-year – I'd like to see John Daly in this British Open, because he won – he won it in 95, my bad. But still.
I'd like to see John Daly golfing anytime we can, Jim.
Hell yeah.
Nice. About the Old Hickory Country Club out there. You can find him. That's good stuff. Ginger, great stuff, man, as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. And we will talk to you soon, my friend.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, our guest here on the program. We'll react to what Gentry had to say coming to next. Plus, more on the Maverick Bork deal by the Predators that reminds me of some oldies, but some goodies that David Poile threw out there. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025.
Will you explain to Dylan in Antioch, I put tried to do a funny reply, how does an offer sheet work?
So offer sheet works like this. Like you basically, there's a team, let's say Anaheim's the example in this one. Leo Carlson is a restricted free agent, which means he's not unrestricted. He can't just go anywhere he wants to go. But an offer sheet, he can sign the offer sheet. And basically what that means is when you sign the offer sheet, either your team that you're already on can match it and you stay with them under that contract, or if they don't want to match it, they get draft compensation for you and you go to the team that you signed the offer sheet. So it's basically you're either your contract is locked in place. It's going to be that number, and either you're staying with the team that you're on or you're going to the team that signed you to a contract. But you're not, you don't have like the option to just go wherever you want.
So what, in your gut, what does Anaheim do for this guy?
I think they'll match.
Really?
I do.
$18 million.
Tough decision because they got some other young guys they're going to have to sign to big contracts here soon. But I think they'll match. That's a lot of money.
I mean, they got Disney money, right?
That's true.
Are they still part of Disney, the Ducks?
I don't think so, but I mean,
I'm about 9 years behind a lot of things.
It's okay. Right? I mean, I wish they were. Their uniforms are way better.
Yeah, right.
Back when Disney owned the team. Way better.
Yeah. So if football did this, it would be catastrophic.
Yeah. I mean, there would be people getting signed all the time.
Yeah.
So,
like Dan Moore Jr.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We'll get him 4 years, $500 a year.
And like, the Titans, I'd be like, yeah, you go ahead and take him. All right, cool. Good stuff.
Right.
Oh, my God. So, you've got that. That's what the offer sheet kind of boils down to in the NHL. The Maverick Bork deal that the Predators signed, it's 6 years at $5.5 million per. And you may look at that and say, you know, that seems like a lot of money for a guy that hasn't done much in the league yet. I kind of like it, and it reminds me of some contracts that David Poile signed kind of that led to the heyday of the Predators, where he signed Roman Josi to a long-term deal. I think it was like $4 million per year. Back when Josi really hadn't done anything yet, and he had some concussion problems, and it was like, man, that's a lot of term to give Roman Josi. Well, it turned out to be a great deal.
Sure.
Ekholm did kind of the same thing. Ellis did the same thing. Like he went through a run where he signed – guys that really hadn't proved a whole lot yet at the NHL level, and he ended up getting them on really good value. I think this one has a chance to be that for the Predators. Like, you get the long-term security if you're Maverick Bork of a six-year deal. I mean, $5.5 million per year is nothing to sneeze at, but I also think there's a chance that with the cap being what it is in the NHL and it's going up, like, he could outperform that contract pretty quickly. I think it's a really good bet if you're the Predators.
Is that a backup quarterback kind of signing?
A little bit.
Like you pay a little bit too much.
Pay a little bit too much to secure that spot.
Right.
Yeah. Like and again, if he turns into what they think he can be, I think you're going to look in the next couple of years at that contract and you're going to say, that's pretty good value for what he is now at this stage. I mean, I know you brought up Stars fans that are mad, and I'm with you. Anytime you know you can make Stars fans mad, that's good.
Right.
Like they saw that deal, and they're like, you got to be kidding me. Like that's what they got him for the next 6 years? So they're very upset about it.
Who was the one that Trotz traded to Pittsburgh for like a fourth rounder, and then they traded the guy for a second rounder?
That was Luke Shen, a couple years ago. It didn't work out well.
Right. It was like, what the hell is going on?
Immediately.
Yeah.
Like 2 days later.
That's right. Yeah.
They just flipped him.
I asked Jim Diamond this one time. You might remember this. Who was the Preds player that they picked up, and they were going to ship him off, but they wouldn't let him leave the locker room? He sat inside like a room.
Yeah.
He sat there, and we tried to peek at him, and Kevin Wilson, no, you can't look in there. I'm like, does he have Ebola? Can we not just peek in and say hi to him? And they kept him in. And
I'm
it wasn't Mark.
Who that
it
was.
Wasn't Mark Belanger or Belanger.
No.
Because that guy came in and was shipped out like an hour later. But this was a guy that's kind of set in a room, and they guarded the door, and we couldn't see him, but he was in there.
Yeah.
And then he was gone like the next night, or it was crazy.
Those kind of stories always, like, you see it in the NHL. You don't see it as much as you used to. But you see it in baseball a lot too, where it's like, hey, you're getting traded, and you're getting traded to the team that's on the other side of the hallway over here. So
right.
Just gather your stuff, walk across the hallway, and now, like, you know, you're a member of the Miami Marlins instead of the
Good
Braves.
Good luck on that.
Have fun. See
so
you later.
Where's Bort? I mean, does he fit a second line guy?
I think he's second line guy. I think he'll start next year on the second line. I think they want to put him at center. And then you'll kind of see where things go from there. But I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good second-line player for them for a while.
So right now, who's the first line right now?
Probably Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Evangelista. You could kind of – you could put Stamkos in there with O'Reilly if you wanted to. But I think they'll probably start Forsberg, O'Reilly, Evangelista. And my guess is Bork plays with Stamkos and maybe Wood over. I'm interested to see if they leave Wood at center, if they put him back to the wing, but that's probably where they'll start.
That's not bad.
No,
is that a top 10 line in the NHL?
I'd have to go through him. Probably not, but it's probably about middle of the pack. Like, if Bork turns into what they think he can be and Brady, like, I think what this does is you've got, I think, what can be a top six centerman locked down for the next 6 years.
Okay.
And then if Brady Martin eventually grows into kind of that top line guy that you want, well, all of a sudden you've got two young guys down the middle that are pretty good. And I think you've got the ability to add a 24-year-old center that's a good player
right.
and is demonstrated to be a good player. It just doesn't happen very often in the league. So I think it's a first Predators move via trade that they've made in a while where I look at it and I say, that's pretty good stuff. That's good stuff.
If Maverick Bork scores a goal and they don't play the theme to Top Gun at Bridgestone, I'm going to call Sean Henry.
I mean,
I'm going to Sean Henry's house.
You got to have some of that, right? Like, it's got to be in the works already. It's a great name. It really is.
Because there's no E in it.
No. It's a great name.
Right?
I think you got to be.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I mean, when he scores, blast that. Into the next period or whatever, the next shift that goes on.
I mean, the only problem is he's not American. He's Canadian. But we can adopt him, you know?
Absolutely can. We adopted Trotz.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, he's Canadian-American.
Exactly.
Yeah. We'd say he's American-Canadian.
That is interesting. In hockey, I wonder if they could adopt a individual goal songs as opposed to goal song.
I kind of like that idea. I really do.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. A little bit more work for Paul McCann. He can do it, though. He's been there 55 years.
Yeah, you know, someone has – it's like a walk-up song.
Yeah, exactly.
A goal song.
I agree.
Yes.
I think that – and I think – I want to say there's some minor league teams that do that. But I kind of like it, the idea of individual goal songs.
Yeah. What's your walk-up song?
That's a good question, man. Maybe Lonely is the Night by Billy Squire.
That's a good one. Yeah.
It's good stuff. It wouldn't be anything that's been made in the last 15 years.
Same. I don't know any new music at all.
Yeah.
I'd probably go with the Magnum P.I. theme.
I could see that.
Because that's just the greatest theme ever. I would do that.
I could see that.
Chase probably go Chariots of Fire. He's a little slow in the getting going. So one of those.
Ian, what's yours? What would your walk-up song
be? That's a good question. I'd have to think about that. I don't know. I don't know if I go like something personal or do you just go – something hype.
Would it be My Morning Jacket?
That's, you know, that would be my personal, would be My Morning Jacket. It's my favorite band.
All right.
And maybe go through something like that. But Styx, Renegade.
Oh, yeah.
Is a fun one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to go through it.
I saw Styx one time play live after a Milwaukee Admirals game. They had the Admirals hockey game, and after the game, everybody just hung around, and Styx hopped out there on stage.
On the ice?
Oh, yeah. They built a stage, like, on the ice and just hopped out there and played.
Did any fans get on the ice?
No. Oh, I was on the bench. Like, I was where, like, the players were because, the people in the organization brought me down there for it. But, like, the entire building stayed. Nobody left. Like,
really?
The whole building was full, and it was just for Styx.
That's cool.
They rocked. It was awesome.
Yeah, I saw a quick story. Dennis DeYoung was out on his own, the former lead singer of Styx, and he was at TPAC, and he was twirling, dancing.
Yeah.
It might have been one of those. It was a really popular song. I forget what it was. And when he does, he rips the cord out from the amplifier for his lead guitar player and then rips out the bass player. He's like spinning. It was the most surreal thing. So all the sound was gone. He's still singing. And meanwhile, the crew's trying to plug everything back in, and he ripped it out from the thing.
There was an 80-year-old woman in the crowd that was just in love with Tommy Shaw. Just in love. Screaming the whole time.
He's cute for 5'2". It's like he's like a little Nick Frazier. 5'2", you could squeeze him, put him in your pocket.
Well, speaking of, Nick Frazier will be with us. Coming up next, we'll get into the match tonight for Team USA. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 the game. I mean, I almost don't want to talk with this song on.
Then don't.
I may not. We welcome in Nick Frazier to the program. Dr. Crane here with us. Nicholas, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Robert. Good to see you. Glad to be on the show. I appreciate the invitation.
It's good to have you with us. Obviously, we talked about this to begin the show. Very exciting times right now for the World Cup and Team USA. Balogun looks like he's going to be back in there tonight. The Belgians have appealed, so we'll see what that looks like.
They have until 5 p.m.
They got until 5 p.m., so that could be cutting it pretty close when it comes to that decision tonight. But I'll start it with a very simple question. From your trained eye on this, the differences between having him available, not having him available, and what that allows the United States to do on the attack if he's in there tonight.
It's huge. I mean, now the United States does not have to question their decision of who they're going to put up top. I mean, that would have probably been Ricardo Pepi or Christian Pulisic, or in this case, Tim Weah. I mean, that was a guy that they played out at the left attacking mid role against Turkey, and it didn't turn out well for him. His left foot was obsolete, and they just didn't have any flow of offensive motion with them. And with that being said, now that they have Flo Balogun available, they can play their true way of soccer, and that's playing quick in transition and allowing the ball to be spaced out on the left side and then having those overlapping runs on the right.
What do you when you're looking at Belgium, obviously – I think for those who have followed this tournament, I think it's a winnable game whether or not he was in there. Obviously, having Balogun in there helps, and you like your chances more. What do you think of the matchup itself tonight for USA against Belgium, and how equipped are they from a matchup standpoint to go out there and get it done tonight? Move on.
I would give the U.S. a lot of credit, because especially for Mauricio Pochettino, from what I've heard and from what I've seen online and read online, Pochettino is treating every single week like it's preseason training for this team. They're going out there, they're running nonstop. As for Belgium, and I've stated this multiple times on these airwaves, Belgium is holding on to their golden era of soccer. A lot of these players are in their early 30s, mid-30s, and with Balogun available tonight, it allows Belgium to play true to their formation. It doesn't allow Belgium to kind of make the midfield compact. And I think they have one of the best midfielders of all time. That's Kevin De Bruyne, who played for Man City and now plays for Napoli. This is a game to where U.S. men's national team can easily outpace Belgium and make them tired by the second half.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I read that the Cape Verde goalkeeper, they found him on LinkedIn.
Did they?
That's the story.
Well, I mean, the guy only had like 2,000 followers on social media, and now he has like 40 million.
40 years old. So you talk about Belgium, like they're kind of old. I think Messi's, what, 39?
Yeah.
We've talked about age. Yep. It, to me,
well,
if you got passion and you're – I mean, Messi looks like he's 19.
That's very fair. I think for Belgium's case, all these veteran players, they're not as quick and as fast. Like, I gripe a lot about Tim Ream and how he's not able to close space for the U.S. men's national team as a defender, center back, that is. Now that they're playing Belgium, they have Romelu Lukaku up top, who's kind of like a
who?
Romelu Lukaku.
Okay.
Yeah, he is.
You just made that up.
No.
No, that's a real name?
Yeah,
that's a real name. That's the
name
of a bird I used to have.
Well, they also have a forward named Jeremy Doku. So Jeremy Doku.
That's more plausible than this cockatoo guy you just brought up.
Romelu Lukaku. There you go. Yeah.
Is he good?
Yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, he's like 34-ish, 33-ish. Okay. So overall.
It's good age.
Yeah. right. Look.
Robbie, why aren't you out there? You're that age.
You don't want me out there.
No.
It'd be some serious trouble if I was out there.
No, you can hang with him, Robbie. It just for 10 minutes.
I don't know if I could run up down the field one time.
I'm right there with you. No, but just looking at the way Belgium's going to play, it's going to be like the Mexico-England game last night a little bit. Now, I'm not saying as back and forth with all the penalties and so forth, but you look at Belgium where they're structured on the field, they know how to wear teams down by passing the ball around and rotating it around the left to right flanks, just trying to expose pockets of space in between in the middle. And then you have the U.S. that hopefully if they're – disciplined enough, they can sit back in their half and just wait for the opportunity to counterpress.
Can I ask? Ask you this: is there? This is actually a serious question for
me. I love it.
You're welcome. In hockey, you have icing, right? Just get the puck down there. In soccer, is there a similar thing to icing? Like if you're crashing my net, I'm going to kick the ball as far as I can away.
Yeah, it's basically a player that's lined up offsides behind the final defender, and they know they're well offsides and the ball's not within reach, and it goes towards the goalkeeper. They just let that ball go, and the goalkeeper takes it to continue the play.
But if my goaltender's occupied, can I kick it like I'm icing the puck?
Not really. It just goes out of play.
So do you get a free throw in or something?
The other team will get the possession, yes.
Okay. Well, good. I'd rather them do that than have a shot at being getting a goal when they're that close.
Yeah. That's a good question, Joe.
That was a good question. Okay. So if they get this done and they win tonight and they move on to the quarterfinals, obviously it's a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal already. And people have gotten behind this team, and it's becoming a cultural phenomenon watching this take place. If they win tonight, how do you put into scope what that does for U.S. soccer?
It puts them on another level. It allows the youth game to grow even stronger. I think what's the biggest gap is for soccer to grow in the States is the financial aspect of it all. And you mentioned it earlier about travel baseball, travel soccer.
Yep.
When you invest in anything, it starts to add up more and more. I think for soccer, you buy $200-$300 pair of cleats. I mean, if you're at the lower levels like youth, it's probably like $120. Then you buy $20 shin guards.
Yep.
Then you buy your socks and your jerseys. By that time, you're spending about $200-$300. Now, if you're playing at a higher level and you're playing at a more, I guess, advanced role in soccer, and you're
sort of
at
hotels and gas,
yeah,
and all that.
Yeah. Add all that, yeah, you're going to be spending a lot of money. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's one of the Fox analysts, he's even mentioned that before on multiple podcasts. Because when I was here at LAFC, I had a kid that said, "Dad, I'm spending $2,000-$3,000." Nonetheless, he's not hurting for money, but $2,000-$3,000 to play at a high level when you go overseas to Europe, and you're basically having to pay, I don't know, $400-$500, and if you're actually good, they value your talent and they take you to a higher level.
Yep.
So as for the States, if they win tonight, I think this puts them in a whole nother bracket.
So we're going to find out, assuming they win tonight,
yep,
which is a heck of an assumption, but let's operate that way for a second. We're going to know who they're playing before. You got Portugal and Spain coming up. I mean, obviously, common sense would tell me I'd rather see Portugal. Am
yes.
I crazy? And what sort of a chance do you think Portugal's got to get Spain earlier today?
If I had to give a percentage, I'd be 60-40.
Okay.
Spain. 40% to Portugal, just because the way Portugal –
big rivalry, by the way.
Yes. Portugal plays – they structure everything around, I'd say, Cristiano Ronaldo. And I think Ronaldo has taken a step back in some cases to where he knows that I can't be having the ball 24-7. You're seeing guys like Rafael Leal, who's more implemented into the forward attack. And that's a player that is versatile on the left flank and left side of the field. And you're able to just open up pockets of space in the midfield to draw it back in. I think that's something that Portugal needs to really hone in on, because Spain – defensively are probably the most sound team in the tournament. Like, you could say France, Argentina are one of the best attacking teams. I think Spain fundamentally is one of the best teams in this tournament.
So, USA win tonight?
Yes. I think they win.
Killing it, man. Yeah. Your
I said 2-1 earlier.
Yeah, I think he's spot on with that.
I said 2-1 loss because.
Why is that?
I'm always wrong.
Okay.
I think it's a little reverse mojo.
You have nailed it. Every game you've nailed. Every single game.
Well, thank you.
You even said the Turkey game, they would probably lose a Turkey game.
Thank you.
And they lost Turkey.
Yeah.
Or Turkey, whatever.
Turkey. I just call them Turkey.
That's the first time I'd ever seen that, by the way.
Yeah. Same here, too, right?
Yeah.
So I went to Publix. I said, "Do you have any oven-roasted Turkey?" And they said, "Sir, would you please leave?"
Well, if you look online,
come back.
Exit the premises, please.
if you look online, Turkey, it was changed because they don't want to be looked at as that country that's basically named after a bird.
Yeah.
The United Nations changed that back in like 2012, I think. I have to go back and
look
at
it. It's a thousand years.
It's a history lesson.
Drain, right?
Yeah.
So, get rid of all that.
And for the record, England did not create soccer.
Here we
I'm
go. Here we go.
And tired.
This is it.
Of England.
He hates English people.
Look, last night was a great game.
I was torn on who to root for last night. I'll be honest with you. For
really?
Some reason. The whole U.S.-Mexico was a rivalry, and how Mexico, you want to talk about flopping.
Oh, yeah.
Mexico is big floppers.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know. I had trouble with that one last night.
Ian, did you not shoot off fireworks? Are you all right? July 5th hangover? I mean,
I did not do fireworks, no.
We already had this discussion if you listen at 6 o'clock.
I did.
Listen,
I did.
Why do you hate English people?
I think they're the most obnoxious fan base in all the world when it comes to soccer.
Here we go.
They think they created it. They didn't. China created it in the 3rd century. Like, why are we giving so much credit to England? Yes, the game did evolve into England, that is, and it was basically structured with the football federation that they allowed them to create rules. I get all that. But they are the worst fan base in planet Earth. They're the Dallas Cowboys of soccer. Wow. They've won one championship in 1966 for the World Cup. They've been runners-up for a lot of times now. They lost to Italy in the 2020 Euros, and I will hold on to that like it is my Super Bowl. I now don't care.
But
I'm just saying.
You got to say what they did last night was pretty badass.
Yes.
In that environment with 80,000 people rooting against you.
If that penalty was not awarded for England to go up 3-1, that game is completely different. I think we're looking at it this morning as Mexico moved on to the next round.
Oh, see, okay. I'm glad we uncovered this today.
I mean, his disdain where I like Ian kind of upset about Mexico and you.
Harry
and all that.
Kane, the Prince of Chins. I mean, goodness gracious.
Who knew? Dr. Crane, that upset about the English.
They're probably the most frustrating fan base to sit around with to watch a game, to listen to see online that the football's coming home. No, football's going home. It's not coming home. It's going home. I'm sick and tired of it. I really am.
If King Charles walked right now, would you be like, hey, pal, not here, not today?
I think you would.
I do too as well.
We would go out to lunch, and I would have a sophisticated discussion with him.
Okay.
I feel like with tea and
– calmer discussion.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But back to U.S. point real quick. I did tell Joseph before the tournament began, if they matched up with Spain in the quarterfinals, that would be the ceiling for the U.S., in my opinion.
Okay. So we agree to this. If the USA gets to the July 19th to the final round, it's the most watched event in American history.
Hands down.
It's bigger than the Super Bowl. It's bigger than the final episode of MASH. It's bigger than all that, right?
Well, they already had, I think, the highest viewership ever was like 24 million, and they peaked at 31.8 million, if I'm not mistaken, on Fox's broadcast.
I think DVD said that it's about an average viewership for the NFL wildcard weekend.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're definitely hitting numbers that they've never seen before.
Playoff stuff.
Okay.
Pretty big.
Stuff. Pretty big stuff.
See you at Geodis Park tonight, buddy, right?
Won't be there, Joe.
Aren't there a watch party?
There is. You had to RSVP. I won't be there.
I'll be at Publix getting turkey.
Hey, if you want to hear more soccer coverage, BJ Callahan is coming on this afternoon.
There you go.
2:30. So
nice.
There you go.
What time?
2:30.
Oh, so I get to do the interview with him.
Yes, you do.
Oh, my gosh. I'll just shut up to that whole time. For those who don't know, Nick and Connor filling in for the Chase on Vacation.
Yep.
I'm filling here because Rex Road's gone, and then you're doing the noon to three today.
There you go.
Love it.
We look forward to it. Thank you for being with us this
morning,
my friend.
Thank you for having me. Anytime. It might be a little bit Robbie Stanley on the midday this week.
That's right. We'll see how it goes. Yep. We'll see how it goes. We'll have the Rob rant coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Yeah, so I was on acid the other day.
He will purposely induce gout.
Zombie Chase can bite me.
It's been awfully quiet on the meth lab front.
I don't like this media guy. Just bring your cameras on down.
I was dunking my head in the toilet to cool off. I'm sorry.
A lot of soiling going on today.
I would bathe in sticky pop right now to get out of the studio.
Well, at least he didn't say he hated his father.
It is time for the Rob Rant, brought to you by Rapid Response Generators. Power when it matters most and served by the Wine Cellar in Hendersonville. Big Joe Dubin with me today here on the program. All right.
Joe, I want to turn your attention to what is, to me, one of the more unfortunate developments in the history of Facebook. And I have no idea how long this has been going on, but I'm a member of a very limited amount. You know, these like hip pages, like Hip Donaldson, Hip Hendersonville, all that stuff. I'm a member of a couple of those because every now and then, I mean, you run across some good information that lets you know about some events that are going on. And
sure.
And I'm old, and I look forward to reading those things on Hip Hendersonville. The recent thing that I've discovered, I guess there's now an ability, and I don't know how long this has gone on. There's an ability when you're on one of these pages to comment and or post anonymously. So you don't have to have your actual name attached to it. It just gives you like a bot.
Okay.
So it leads to a whole lot of whining on there because nobody is being outed for, you know, it's anonymous. So nobody knows who's doing the whining.
Interesting.
So the other day, July 3rd comes around. I live north of town, so up in the Hendersonville area. And they've done a July 3rd fireworks show for as long as I can remember. So the other day, obviously, it stormed, right? There's a bunch of storms going on throughout the day. And I think Hendersonville, along with a couple other places around here, had to cancel, like, their July 3rd stuff at the park. I think they still shot off the fireworks, but like all the festival stuff.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Because the park was flooding and all that, they had to cancel. And people were just whining. Golly, were they complaining on like these hip Hendersonville places. And they were doing it anonymously. And I just want to say this. Like, I understand sometimes, like, maybe there's a reason for anonymous complaints on Facebook. And maybe you're a business owner and you don't want to, whatever it is. But like, to me, if you're complaining about like a fireworks show being canceled or a festival being canceled, or you're complaining about like somebody driving in traffic that you saw, like don't be anonymous. Like put your name to it. What are we doing? Like I don't think you need to be anonymous on these pages. I think people they get away too much from, oh, well, I don't have to actually answer for this. I don't have to actually put my name to the comments I'm going to make. So I'm just going to go anonymous. I'd like to see these pages get rid of it. We don't need anonymity. If you're going to say something, put your name to it out there. And people even respond. Like, I'll go look sometimes, and it, like, the original poster's anonymous, and then, like, everybody replying back to him's anonymous. So, like, they're all fighting with each other, but nobody knows anybody's name throughout right. The whole thing. It drives me insane.
So, you propose to lose the...
Get rid of it. No more anonymity.
And just have your name. Then nobody's going to comment, because everybody's scared to do that, right?
Clearly.
They're not going to do that. I liken this to one time when I was at Channel 2. It was the flood of 2010. Remember the playoff game?
Oh, yeah.
With the Blackhawks? Somebody called and was ripping us for – we didn't have the game on, but we had something else on, but we had the weather box up, right? And the guy was like, I'll come down there and da-da-da-da. So we have caller ID. And I said, hey, sir, is your number 731-225? He's like, yeah. I said, how about I call you back when all this is done and we get together and have coffee or something? Look, man, I'm missing the game. I understand what you're doing. I was like, yeah. So it goes along with your anonymity of once you're outed, it's a whole different world, right? You're not going to be that guy anymore. But remember this, 3% of the world is against oxygen.
Yeah, exactly.
So remember that when these posts go on. But I had no idea you could post anonymous from there.
I've gotten off Twitter. It's been a wonderful thing. I will say the Facebook comment sections of like local news channels and stuff like that, you can find some stuff on there, man. It's entertaining.
Great. Oh, it is. I mean, when I did it during COVID, I had people wish me death.
Oh, yeah.
On Facebook. And it was eye-opening. Because I was out doing stories and reporting and everything, and they just lost their mind on me. And it became to the point where it was like, all right, how can I piss you off even more? Keep watching. But, yeah, I mean, so they shot the fireworks off, right?
They shot the fireworks off.
Yeah. And there will be no Andy Gilley hatred.
Not on this program.
Not on this program at all. Andy Gilley's a fine man.
Not on this program.
You
got a lot of crap the other day, though. I did see that.
Oh, I'm sure, because it was like, was it? You can shoot off fireworks, but you can't have the event.
A lot of that, yeah. It's like, well, there's part of the ground that's underwater over here.
Right? So do all that.
The thing is, and this is the case where a lot of people complain about this stuff, had they not canceled it and people were walking around there and then basically, like, you know, water, they'd been complaining about that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, a lot of these things you can't win on. There's just complaining either way.
Now, I saw, isn't Gallatin holding the fireworks thing this week or something?
I don't know.
Tuesday or Wednesday, they're postponed something that's happening. So,
man, I would think when you buy up all those fireworks, you got to shoot them at some point, right?
They do. Yeah. Right, absolutely do. Yeah. Just not in Davidson County where it's illegal.
Exactly.
Because I will turn you in, which I should have done Saturday night when they were blowing things up well into Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Which was crazy.
I don't think people follow the time ordinances around here.
Not that much. Not at all.
Not that much. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us coming up next for his weekly visit. We'll take your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Bretzky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.